So is this going to be a two or a three-parter, do you think?
Probably going to be two, I would assume. How old were you that year?
87, I was 11.
I was 14, so.
Yeah,
I was getting into mischief.
I was getting into music.
You know, and what's funny is, that year all around for me, the year I turned 14 was when, that was a rough year for me, because I did a lot of first that year. And it wasn't necessarily all good.
Well, we'll get into it here shortly. Let me introduce the audience to us. Happy November 5th, everybody.
Getting ready for Turkey Day. Past Halloween. I'm getting ready for the next.
Halloween has passed. Hangover still hurting a little bit. Between the party and all of the sugar and the candy and the extra sugar and the trick-or-treating. This is episode 108 of the Scary Dad Podcast. And I was listening to a thing that pointed out that pretty much everything that we like, with a few exceptions, but most everything, happened in 1987. And I thought, let me look into this. So I did a quick, hit a Google of 1987. And as we sit here looking at the notes, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 pages of.
And that's just the handwritten stuff that you put down.
That's college ruled notes. Every single thing on here is something that we can talk about. We might skip over a few.
Right.
But we might be here for a while. Because 1987 was pretty freaking awesome. So this will be part one of at least two parts where we discuss the year of our Lord, 1987. Mr. Gomez.
First, the old business.
Okay. You seen V for Vendetta?
Yes.
You know that mask?
Yeah, the Anon mask.
That's the Guy Fawkes mask.
Yep.
He's a...
Is it a Gee Fawkes?
Guy Gee.
Okay.
Anyway, this date in 1605 was the gunpowder plot. Guy Fawkes or Gee Fawkes was arrested for his part in what essentially was a whole bunch of wheelbarrows being burrowed under Parliament in England.
Okay.
They were going to blow up Parliament. And
it now represents anarchy.
It does. Which is kind of funny, interestingly enough, because a lot of the people that wear the anonymous masks, the Guy Fawkes masks or Guy Fawkes masks, they're anti any, like, the a lot of stuff that they talk about, they're against theocracy, and they're against any kind of morality inside of government. And then they use his visage, his face, as a symbol. But the reality was he was trying to blow up Parliament because for him and his co-conspirators, it was too secular. He was trying to install a theocratic government. So, irony being what it is, people that don't know their history, but look it up. Okay, and this date in 1872, the women's suffrage movement, Susan B. Anthony votes, even though it's against the law, and she is fined $100.
That was big money back in those days.
That was a lot of money in 1872. Okay, a little conspiracy theory intrigue. On this date in 1925, secret agent Sidney Reilly, the first quote-unquote super spy of the 20th century, is executed by the Soviet secret police. So you must not have been that good if you got caught. He was no James Bond. All right, in this date, 1940, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the first and only president elected to a third term. After that, they changed the laws to where it's two-term only.
Right.
Strangely enough, the Congress that voted to make that law voted in for themselves. So we still have career politicians.
Yeah, we need term limits on them.
And on this date in 2006, Saddam Hussein is sentenced to death. All right. Notable births. On this date in 1911, Cowboy Roy Rogers was born. In 1913, Vivian Leigh. You'd know her from Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
In 1931, Ike Turner.
He's just a cake in a bell.
What the problem is?
What's up with this cake? I got this cake.
Okay, 1938, comic greats Jim Steranko. He created Nick Fury.
Yep.
1941, Art Garfunkel, half of the
Simon and Garfunkel.
1958, Robert Patrick. You'd know him best as a T-1000 from Terminator 2. Okay. He was also in X-Files.
Yeah.
And he's not as well known, but in 1974, alt-country artist Ryan Adams, who actually I've seen him live a few times. He's really, really good.
Okay.
His Instagram is mostly pictures of his cats, but if you ever get a chance to listen to his music, it's good stuff.
Speaking of social media, shout out to Amanda Weiss for liking one of our tweets today.
Nice.
That she was mentioned in. She's such a sweet lady. Really, really. She's going to be at Texas Frightmare Weekend, of course. They have announced her, so.
Beautiful. It's like a...
It's going to be a Nightmare on Elm Street reunion.
Yeah.
So I know Robert Englund's coming. You know he's coming.
Yeah, they haven't announced him yet, but you can't have everybody else from the movies and not have him. Not if you're Frightmare, anyway. Okay, so you want to hear something cool about Frightmare?
Shoot.
I don't know her name, but some other convention in, like, California or something put out a search. They wanted to find the girl who played Judith Myers in the original Halloween movie.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find her. She's going to be a Frightmare.
Yep.
They found
only her second appearance, I think.
Yeah. So that is insane.
Because her first appearance was very recent. From what I understand, just talking to her, she was saying that she had no idea that she was famous.
Yeah.
She didn't realize people cared about who she was or anything like that.
She probably just didn't keep up with the dailies or whatever. Right. Interestingly enough, the day we're recording this is October 16th. Today is Julie Adams' birthday from Creature from the Black Lagoon.
October 17th, actually. The 16th was yesterday.
Okay, 17th, sorry.
It's my sister's birthday, that's how I know.
Okay, so. Today is the 17th,
yes.
Julie Adams' birthday. Well, completely coincidentally, because I didn't realize this whenever I did it, but I watched Creature the other night, and I was watching the bonus features, and it's kind of funny because she was sitting in an interview, and she's talking about, she said that back then, actors and actresses were just employees of the studio. So she was basically just told, you're going to be in this movie. And she's like, it's kind of funny. She's like, I didn't want to be in a monster flick. I wanted to be in a romance.
Right.
She's like, I'm really glad I showed up. But she's like, I was a good girl and I just did. But, but yeah, that's the thing she's known most for. And, but happy birthday to Julie Adams. But like you say, I had no idea that it was going to make her famous.
Yeah.
She's, that's one thing that she's known for the most. There aren't any notable deaths today. So that was a good thing.
Yep.
So without further ado, we're going to take a break. And then we will get into some new business.
There's nothing like Pizza Hut pan pizza.
Making it big, making it tall, making it splash and having it all. Making it heat, making it deep. Sizzle and drizzle, steam and steam it. Making it early, making it late. Pizza Hut, making it great.
The great taste of pan pizza. Two layers of cheese, lots of toppings, and a chewy crust. It's America's favorite.
Pizza Hut, making it great.
And we're back.
Yeah, finished with the neck cracking, and we're back. Hope you enjoyed that little interlude that we had for you. Don't have a whole lot, but it's time for a little bit of...
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay. First off, as I'm sure you've heard by now, the infamous politician and brothel owner, Dennis Hoff, has passed away.
I have heard that.
What I found crazy, just reading the initial article about Dennis Hoff passing away, which they still haven't, as of this recording, they still haven't figured out what his cause of death was. Just reading articles about it, he had just got through spending the day with Ron Jeremy, his best friend. Sheriff Joe Arpaio and his partner in life, Heidi Fleiss. It's just the weirdest group of people you can imagine being together. Apparently him, Ron Jeremy, and Sheriff Joe Arpaio, America's favorite Looney Tunes sheriff from Arizona, spent the day at a political rally for his run for Senate that he's having right now. And then it was his birthday, so he partied the night. What's weird is that one of the articles I found actually showed a picture of the particular prostitute he had spent the night with for his birthday. And 20 hours later, Ron Jeremy went to wake him up from what everything is saying. Ron Jeremy woke up about 10:30, thought it was odd that Dennis wasn't up yet, went to his room, tried waking him up, wouldn't get up. He went and got some help. So the article actually said some of the prostitutes in the brothel were trained in CPR. Tried to revive him. They couldn't. And he was pronounced dead
on the
scene. It was just weird when I read Ron Jeremy, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and Dennis Offit spent the day at a political rally for him.
Sometimes when I'm running over like new or old business, I'll skip over things. And I don't know if it was this one or the one from before, but it was like on this date, like Mother Teresa is achieved sainthood. So it's like, but the life well lived, which one is more fun? It's like the angel and the devil on your shoulder. You're like, whoa. But man, the dude partied till the end, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course, he got famous because of the HBO series Cat House, which it was a reality show about life at the brothels that he owned in Nevada where prostitution is legal. I think he owned 11 brothels altogether and just made a fortune off of being a pimp. Country's most famous pimp and politician. Okay. This is a weird story out of Oregon. 66-year-old Gregory Rodveld had lost his house due to being sued for something. I don't even remember exactly what it was he was sued for. But prior to leaving the house, he didn't want to lose his house. He was pretty pissed off about it. So he went and set up booby traps a la Home Alone all over this house. And unfortunately, an FBI agent got injured. He sent a letter to a real estate agent saying, hey, I know you're going to show my house today. Just to warn you, it is booby-trapped.
Why would he do that?
Because I guess he may have started feeling some regret about you know what he had done. But some of the booby traps he had set up, when you walked into the fence, he had a circular hot tub sitting on its side to where when you hit a tripwire, the hot tub was released and would roll towards the person, a la Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, to try to crush someone with a circular hot tub. And then upon entering the house, he had a wheelchair set up with a fishing line. And unfortunately, FBI agent opened the house, set off that booby trap, and shotgun. There was a shotgun set up on the wheelchair that shot the FBI agent. Yeah.
That's right out of Salem's Lot.
Yeah. So he had been in jail following an armed standoff in Arizona last year. The real estate agent selling the home alerted authorities at the end of August after coming across a sign on the property saying it was protected by improvised devices.
Jeez.
So yeah, the FBI agent didn't die. He was shot in the leg by the shotguns, but still, yeah, crazy, crazy ass story, dude. All right, let's go to Minnesota for a second.
Florida man went up there?
No, actually, Florida birds. Apparently, they're having an issue in Gilbert, Minnesota, with numerous birds have started to act erratically in the Midwest town, running into windows, running into cars, because of the strange cycle of weather has caused berries to ferment very rapidly.
So they're getting drunk.
And the birds are getting drunk and falling all over the place. So Minnesota is having an issue with drunk birds all over the place. Which I thought was an awesome story. Since a frost hit Gilbert early, many birds that usually fly south for the winter and not used to fermented berries are still in the area. It's usually younger birds that can't handle the toxins as efficiently as more mature birds. And they're having a spate of drunk birds flying around.
Jeez.
That's pretty awesome.
You see, there's a YouTube video of a drunk squirrel. like he was eating an old corn.
There was one I saw a long time ago where what it is, people had like a corn squirrel feeder that rain had fallen into and flooded it, causing the corn to ferment. And it was so funny because the squirrel's just falling over.
Yeah, he's trying. He's like hops up on the tree and just kind of like falls off. Yeah, I think in this one he was eating like a rotten pumpkin, but it had fermented too. Same thing. They're like, he's been eating the pumpkin. They're like, hey, squirrel. And he like hops up and flips his tail and like falls over. It's just like drunk animals are hilarious.
Yeah, you know what's funny? My dad, I remember as a child, my dad raised Dobermans. He had a bunch of Dobermans and stuff. And he used to give them beer all the time. I took the same thing. My dogs used to drink beer with me. My dog used to drink Andy Gator. I don't know if you're familiar with Andy Gator by Abita Brewery, but it's like twice the alcohol content of normal beer. So yeah, my dog used to get pretty wasted with me. I miss that dog so much, man.
Man, I had this dog named Marley. It was kind of sad because he and I just didn't get along. Like, just different personalities. And but I had him trained. He was a pretty good dog. We didn't get along because he would eat stuff. That was problematic. And I could never get him to not chew on stuff. And anyway, we had this house Carrie and I lived in, and used to have people over all the time. And the dog loved beer. Well, the dog was sneaky, man. So what we'd do is, you know, be hanging out, and people would like leave their beer on a doorstep, you know, because we're standing in the patio drinking. Flipping burgers in the grill, he'd go over and knock the bottle down and like lap it up as it spilled out. One time we had a kind of, it was just like a summer barbecue or something. It was pretty decent crew of folks. And it was early. Like this thing started like noon. So everybody's drinking. I didn't realize the dog was drinking. So we're sitting there and somebody's like, dude, something's wrong with your dog. And I glance over and I noticed that like in the flower bed are like four or five like sideways shiners. And I glanced into the flower bed and I was like, I know what's wrong. So he's sitting there and he's just kind of like he's got this drooling, he's got this glassy look. So I'm like, hey Marley, come here. He like trots over. I was like, give me five. He hops up on his back legs to give me five and just falls backwards. And he like lands on his back. He kind of rolls over and looks up and looks embarrassed. And I look at him, I was like, dude, go get some water and go take a nap. He trots over to the water bowl and he drinks a bunch and then he just flat out falls down, passes out next to the water bowl in the shade. Like 3 hours later, he hops up, walks over, knocks over a beer and starts drinking. Everybody's like, dude, your dog. I'm like, I know, man.
He's got a problem. This is the same dog that got in the stash, man.
Oh, yeah. That's that dog.
Tell you a funny beer drinking story, accidental beer drinking story. When I was little, my dad used to give me beer when I was a baby, when I was a toddler, okay? So he, this is a story that my mom told me. You remember old oil cans, like STP oil treatment? They were similar to a can where you pop the top and you pour. He was working on his car one day, and he had one of those cans that he had popped on the porch. And I went over and drank a can of STP oil treatment and they had to rush me to the hospital.
Oh, no.
And try to explain that shit as far as why. You
why
know?
A kid drink a bunch of STP?
I thought it was a Schlitz.
Yeah, I've told this story a couple times, but my grandfather drank Schlitz. So I, you know, he drank it like it was nothing. And he'd be like, hey, go get me a beer. So I'd go get him a beer, and this was back when the pull tab you pull.
Yeah, that's how my dad's were. Yeah,
and so I remember, God, I must have been like 7 or 8 years old, and I went and got him one, and I put one in my pocket. And my grandmother had a closet built into their garage, so where most people would have a workbench, there was like a plywood wall, and there was this like closet, and so I got this beer, and I went and like. G.I. Joe'd it. Like, I remember it was totally in my head, like Mission Impossible. Like, I went around the back side of the cars and I like snuck into the closet and closed the door and then turned on the lights and then hid behind some coats. Cracked the beer. Took a sip. I liked the way it tasted. Then my mom called me. And what was I going to do? So I just turned it up. And I chugged it down, like first beer I ever drank, I shotgunned that thing. Drank it down, smashed the can, hid the can under this little piece of carpet, and then came out of the closet and ran around the corner and was like, pretended like I was playing in the front yard. Like, here I am. And she told, you know, it was like, oh, okay, well, now I know where you are, so go play. You know, she's just checking on me. And like, not even a minute later, all of a sudden, I didn't feel good. Of course, I wasn't going to understand how that worked. I just knew that I felt like crap.
We ought to do a show one day of just of our craziest childhood stories of just the shit that would go down back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a lot different back then.
It was.
I just can remember some stuff. No, my dad died when I was 9, but I have so many memories of just ridiculous shit that went down that really shouldn't have gone down. From going to the store, getting his beer and his cigarettes for him, to drinking a can of STP because I thought it was a beer, dude.
Well, that first beer that I cracked and chugged, that was a Schlitz. Fist bump. Boom.
Schlitz. Have you drank a Schlitz since then? It's thick and sweet. It's the weirdest beer. It's like Mickey's. It's like Mickey's, but sweet.
Well, this is what I found out. Because my grandfather drank Schlitz. And, I mean, he was a pretty wealthy dude. So why would he be drinking the equivalent of like Busch?
Yeah, Colt 45 or less, malt right? liquor. Yeah.
And what I found out was back in the 40s, Schlitz was the same like market share as like Budweiser is now.
Yeah.
It was huge. It was a giant Milwaukee brand. And if you look at their old advertising, it's like the beer that put Milwaukee on the map. And it was a super premium. It was like the high end of beer in the 40s and the 50s. But what happened is they ran into financial problems and they got sold. And the way the companies work, like giant conglomerations, you have a brewery, they might have Schlitz, but they also might have like 4 or 5 other brands. When the brewery goes under, they buy them based on the name. Mm-hmm. Well, whoever bought them, and you can look this up and it has the names, and I don't think it was Budweiser, but whoever bought them had a competing brand that they wanted to have number one. So even though they acquired the number one brand, they
kind of put it to the side.
They put it to the secondary. And so then the Schlitz market share dropped, and so they were no longer the most popular, and the value of the name started to diminish. Well, then that company got into problems, and so then like after different mergers and acquisitions over time, by the late 80s, I think it was the late 80s, they had lost the original recipe for Schlitz. Or it was like locked in some bureaucrat's drawer, like some company CEO's drawer somewhere. So the Schlitz that you're drinking now is not what they had. Okay. It was completely different. And they intentionally changed it in order to diminish it to bring up their own brand.
So my daddy's Schlitz isn't the same as the Schlitz I'm drinking now.
No, if you go buy Schlitz now, what your dad drank was...
those pony bottles he used to get. Remember those 8-pack pony bottles?
Yeah, completely different stuff. So, man, because I have a nostalgic for, I have this, like, in my head, like I want to drink Schlitz because that's what all the grown-ups drank when I was a kid, but it's not the same.
Right.
I'm drinking Coors right now.
We did, just another thing we could do is one night get some old-school beers, like some PBR. I'm sure you used to drink Mickey's White Mouth back in the day. Get some Red Stripe.
See if we can find some Red Dog.
Yeah. But that's all I got.
All right. Well, we got a long enough episode. This whole episode's going to be reminiscing, so we can go off as long as we need. But let's take a break.
Okay.
We'll be back with 1987.
Sounds good.
Go to town.
Okay. So, I'm going to pick stuff at random. We've got four categories. We've got books, music, movies, and television. And every one of these is a pretty long list of significant achievement in art and culture in the year of 1987. So, kind of with the Jeopardy thing in mind, these are your categories, Alex. You've got books, music, movies, and television. Where would you like to start?
Let's get books out of the way.
Well, I figure we'd mix them up a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of bounce back and forth so people aren't like, man, they did a whole episode on books. Because that's what it'll turn into if we start focusing. So you want to start with books?
Well, lead the show, Bubba.
No. We can start with books. You chose books. So we'll do two books.
There's two books on there that mean a lot to me on that list.
Well,
for sure.
Which ones are they?
Well, one, which has a special place in my heart, especially now, because my son has actually shown an interest in getting into it, is Watchmen.
Watchmen changed the entire genre of comic books.
And, you know, my son came to me and said, hey, I think I want to check out that Watchmen series that you told me about. And I was like, yes, I want you to read the books before you watch the movie. That was Alan Moore. As reclusive and crazy as he is a genius, dude.
He is. Alan Moore changed comics in more ways than one. It wasn't in 87, but he did Watchmen and he did The Killing Joke, which turned Batman from kind of a goofy, colorful character to the dark, brooding Dark Knight.
Look at what he did with the origin of Swamp Thing. He totally redid
it. He completely changed. And Swamp Thing was co-created by Bernie Wrightson.
Yes, and I actually talked to Bernie Wrightson about the change of the origin with Alan Moore, and he was very impressed by that. Because, you know, it was a lot more simplistic before Alan Moore got into it, and it just became something so much more once he got in. Pardon the pun, but once Alan Moore got in, it became so much more.
Yes, absolutely. Well, but in 1987, kind of Alan Moore's flagship Watchmen.
And it's credited, if you look at any article about Watchmen, whether it be on Wikipedia or anywhere else, it is credited as changing the face of comic books.
Completely.
Totally.
And I have to admit, when I was reading comics and I always hear about Watchmen and stuff, you know how something is kind of overhyped, so you're kind of like, I'll get around to it. Can't be as good as everybody says. Watchmen, it's a mind fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is so good. It takes the whole concept of superheroes, which before this, I mean, there were serious superhero storylines. But Watchmen really took superhero, okay, you've got abilities and you've got costumes and you've got
gadgets
and lore. And then dropped it right into the real world amongst geopolitical problems with Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan
and Nixon.
And then, you know, a character like Dr. Manhattan, who kind of, is he deserving? I don't know. He's just a guy who got microwaved.
Yep.
And then he got put back together and he sees all. He's godlike. But he still holds on to his opinions are formed by his humanity. So it's just kind of one of those weird sorts of, if you've never read The Watchmen, movies notwithstanding, the movie was well rendered. Mm-hmm. For as badly critically received as it was, the movie was good.
It follows the comic book very well.
It really
does. For what it can. Because, you know, it's hard to put that 12-issue series into one movie. And they did a good job with it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. The Watchmen changed comic books literally top down. There's comics you read that happened before Watchmen and then after Watchmen. And after Watchmen is what we've got now.
Yeah. And if you've seen The Incredibles but never seen The Watchmen, but you've always wanted to know about a dark version of The Incredibles, check out Watchmen.
The Incredibles is pretty much The Watchmen.
Yeah, it's a Watchmen, but just for kids. Yeah. And of course, the other one on that list that's really big, as far as I'm concerned, is Weave World.
Clive Barker.
My introduction to Clive Barker in high school, and a book that changed my life.
Well, it's not the only Barker that's on this list.
Yep.
All right. So it's my turn now.
Yes.
So between books, movies, music, and television, where would I like to go? I'm going to spin a calculator and close my eyes and say television.
TV was a big part of our lives at that time.
It really was, because there was no internet.
Yeah.
There was no internet.
Video games were pretty... They weren't where they are today, where they took up a lot of your time.
Right. And I don't even know. I think in 87 was...
Because video games were the arcade pretty much for us. You know, you had to go somewhere to play video games.
In 1987, video games were starting to ramp up a bit. Yeah. But NES was pretty much...
Far as home consoles go.
So,
and there's only so much Duck Hunt you can play.
So for those of you who maybe are a little bit younger and don't remember a time when you didn't have a billion channels between the internet and television, get this. In 1987, the Fox News Network was launched. Which, of course, you might be like, well, Fox News, it's conservative and bleh. Oh, no. See, Fox News was the fourth major network to actually come out. There was ABC, NBC, and CBS.
The big three, as they say.
And PBS. PBS, Public Broadcasting. That was what was on TV.
Yep.
And then Fox News comes out. Boom, you have a fourth network. And it debuted in 1987, showing two sitcoms, one of which was Married with Children. The second of which was The Tracy Ullman Show.
That's where Bart Simpson came about.
Oh, yes. The Simpsons' first appearance happened on Fox News in 1987. On The Tracy Ullman Show.
And I remember that. I remember watching that for the first time.
Funnily enough, because Fox News knew what they were up against with the three other networks and all the other stuff that was on, they played both sitcoms three times throughout the night so that people watching the other networks would be able to switch over and see them. So that started the kind of rerun cycle that we see now, like just play it over and over again. But yeah, Fox News, 1987. Prior to that, three networks and PBS.
Yep.
There was no Channel 39. There's no WB.
Do you remember the days back? And I remember this so vividly. But like, okay, if you got cable, there was a box they would put on top of your TV. And you moved the switch over. And that would be your cable stations. And if you wanted, like, Showtime, I don't know if you remember this, but they would come out with this little silver stainless steel cylinder that they would screw into the back of your cable box and then put the coax into that, and now you had Showtime.
I don't remember that.
It was the weirdest shit. Just having that cylinder with the coax tied to it, all of a sudden, bam, you had Showtime.
I don't remember a cylinder. I do remember a little keypad that went between.
This wasn't even a keypad. It was just like a box with a switch that would slide, and when you slid it over, your cable was activated. And you got all these other channels. And then, like I said, if you wanted Showtime, they would put a little cylinder on the back of it. All of a sudden, and I remember that was back when I was a pervy little kid, dude. And I would stay up and watch. Showtime would have these old Italian dubbed in English softcore movies that would come on late at night, dude. Nice. I would stay up late. I'd sneak back into the room and slide it over.
Pre-Skinamax.
Yeah. But there was at that time, there was only Showtime and the Movie Channel. Those were the two movie channels that you can get back in my hometown.
You remember the HBO intro series, like the little
Yes, I do remember that.
It had like the little like the camera hovering over the little like town and flying out into space. God, I remember that was so cool. And it sucked when your parents like you was such an epic intro, and then they'd be like, "We're watching something boring." And you're just like, "I'm going to bed."
And you didn't have a menu; you had a book they would send every month that would show you what when the movies were coming on and everything.
Okay, so this goes back to like 1980. Yeah, it's not 1987; it's like 1984. It had to been 84. So when we first moved from Houston to Portland. We moved down there. It was, when I was six, it was like 82, 83. Something like that. Anyway, we lived there for a while and we got cable. And, cable man shows up, he plugs in the TV, you know, does whatever he's doing, plugs in the TV. Now you have cable. I didn't know. I was like seven, eight, something like that. He leaves. Pop, drops that
the guide
on the table. Well, the cover of that guide was the shark and the skiers from Jaws 3. And all I knew is I was a little kid that was obsessed with sharks. So I was like, what is this? So I open up this book and I start flipping through the movies. And some of the channels we have and some of the channels we don't. But all the movies were listed at the back in kind of a concordance, right? A glossary. And I remember there was this one. I don't think I've ever seen the movie, but I remember staring at the title because it was called My Tutor. And it was rated R for like MLV or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. They would put letters that and you had a key map. So when you go to the key map,
and it would say
nudity,
language, nudity, violence. Mom, what? What's nudity? That's naked people. The picture had this like little blonde girl on there, like not little girl, but like there's a little picture of a blonde girl. I was like. I think this might be something I want to see.
Let me see when it comes on.
Yeah, when does it come on? Oh, we don't have that channel. Damn it. Okay. So I chose TV, so we're going to do two. I'll just start at the beginning. 1987 was the premiere of Unsolved Mysteries.
We've done a show about Unsolved Mysteries because it was so much a part of our lives.
So many scary movies that have just kind of fallen away, and like they did the best they could to make it scary, could never match just the intro theme of Unsolved Mysteries. Once you knew what it was about, Robert Stack's like, here's some shit that happened.
This really happened, and we have no idea why.
Yeah. We don't know who did it. We don't know why it happened.
These people disappeared. It could happen to you. And we have no idea why it happened.
You're like, okay. All right, so let's go back into the spinning bottle machine here. Books, music, movies, or TV?
Do some music, because I got something to add to the list.
All right, because we're gonna knock this out because there's a lot of music. You want to start big, or you want to go like kind of surprised that they were doing something back then?
Well, one that I'll bring up real quick. What's funny is I remember so well. I was 14 years old. I was on a field trip to New Orleans, Louisiana, and for lunch we went to the mall in New Orleans, which is right on the river. It's right by the wharf and everything. And me and my best friend in the world, Jared Bro, he was the best man at my wedding. Been knowing the boy since I was 9 years old. We're walking through and we dash into this music store and we see a cassette. And it's this black dude with a pimped out Cadillac convertible. This shouldn't be a convertible, but it was pimped out to be a convertible. And the title of the album said Born to Mac by Too Short.
Nice.
So me and him put our funds together and we co-bought Born to Mac by Too Short. So it's one of the you know,
seminal,
most groundbreaking rap albums ever. And I remember it was so funny.
One of the first ones, too.
Because you remember cassettes. You could see where you rewound and replayed stuff because the tape kind of come up a little bit. Yeah, it was stretched on that part. And you could see the tracks that we listened to the most. And me and him would split time with that cassette. He'd have it for a week. I'd have it for a week. And we'd go back and forth. But yeah, Too Short, Born and Back was a huge album for us, dude. And there was one song I remember called Freaky Tales, which at 14, we really shouldn't have been listening. But it had the explicit label on it and everything, so we had to jump on it. And Freaky Tales is an 8-minute song about women that Too Short had sex with.
So at 14 years old, you're like, this is the man right
yes,
here.
Yes, yeah. It was 8 minutes of him just talking about women that he had sex with.
This dude.
But yeah, that was a big album back in 87, dude. I remember it so vividly, me and him buying that tape. I remember the cover so well when we found it. And we listened to the hell out of that jam, dude. I'll let you go ahead and pick one now.
Oh man, most of mine is metal based.
Yeah, well, I listened to the same thing, but I remember in 87 there were some pretty serious rap albums that came out in 87.
Yeah, well, if you've got a list of rap albums, I just went mostly metal, and then I went mainstream, and then I was like, Jesus, this list is getting long. And so I stopped writing stuff. So, you know, probably the biggest record, which I'm not a big fan of theirs, but U2's Joshua Tree.
Yeah, that was a huge record.
Joshua Tree came out in 87. And while I believe they had a record before that, this was the record that really made them who they were. And full of hits, kind of... I've never been a big U2 fan, except for, you know, obviously a few songs. Much respect. They're just kind of... My biggest problem with U2 is that they're overplayed, which...
And, you know, that's exactly what kind of got me.
Things that are overplayed is because they have such wide appeal.
Mainstream success.
So I don't like have any ill will towards U2, and I'm not like, oh, you know, I hated it. Just kind of like it was great when it came out, but I just like, yeah, it was good, but man, 8 times a day for 40 years kind of wear on you after a while. But
because it was overplayed for a long time,
it's been overplayed since 1987. Yeah. I remember at the dance, they played like 4 U2 songs like all night long. It was just like, dude, U2 Joshua Tweet.
Just Tree. Hey, Tyson.
Yeah, right.
I broke my back.
Anyway, strangely enough, okay, so One Hit Wonders, Men Without Hats.
Yes, remember them, yes.
I always think of them when I think of Spinal Tap, the
movie.
The little.
Yes.
And the little leprechaun dancing around like he was dancing around Stonehenge, but then it made him into a giant. But you'll hear that song on the radio, and it's just like, I could never understand why they were so horribly maligned. Like in the 90s, it's like, oh, there's Men Without Hats. Like, dude, 3 years ago you were dancing to that song. It was stupid, but it was funny, and it was kind of like the other day, Chumbawamba. Remember that song?
Yes, I remember Chumbawamba.
It's just a song about drinking. And I remember when that song came on, everybody used to just be like, it's the best song ever. I was like, that's Men Without Hats. And guess what happened? That's
what happened to them. Yeah.
So, but if you ever wondered where Men Without Hats came from, 1987, Joshua Tree. See, I could say it if I pay attention. All right. Let's move on to something else.
Well, another huge rap album that came out at that time. You know, N.W.A. had already broke out. You know, gangster rap had kind of, you know, come to the forefront. It was kind of pushing regular rap out of the way. Ice-T, Ryan Pace came out in 1987. And Ice-T, Ryan Pace had I'm Your Pusher. It had so many incredible songs on it. And that's the one that brought Ice-T up to the top. And that had to have been the year that he flipped off the PMRC when they were protesting, and that infamous picture came out of him driving down the street in Hollywood and saying, "Hey, let me make the block." He'll go on making the block, coming back around, and just give them the nice little big middle finger. Just to let them know how I feel about it.
Talking early in the episode about a pimp.
Yeah.
Dude's like probably the most successful pimp that's ever pimped.
Have you ever watched a documentary called American Pimp?
No.
Dude.
It's got Ice-T in it?
It has Ice-T. It has Too Short. It has several other actual pimps in it. And, dude, that movie. Me and my friends used to quote that movie so much because there's one of them. There's one part. This guy goes, "If you tell a bitch you're going to kill her, you got to beat her like you're trying to kill her." Dude, the movie is a serious documentary. These people are real. And there's one part where that same pimp, he's got his bottom bitch. And he's got another one, a new recruit. They all in the hotel room together. And the new recruit is throwing up in the toilet, okay, because she got too drunk. And the bottom bitch is sitting on the bed just looking all, you know, magnanimous because, you know, she knew that bitch couldn't handle liquor. And the pimp is there. "I told you not to drink all that yak. Now look at you. You can't control yourself throwing up in the toilet." And the bottom bitch starts going, "You tell her, daddy. You tell her." Dude, it's a crazy. You got this. It's all on YouTube. There's like five parts on YouTube. This American Pimp documentary. It's the weirdest shit you've ever seen. It's the life of several pimps. And they just go back and forth between them all. But yeah, Too Short and Ice-T are in that movie. Because Ice-T's in there talking about the Players Ball, which is an actual ball they have where they celebrate the Pimp of the Year.
<clears throat> 1987.
But yeah, we used to watch it in college and just laugh. Okay, and one thing I wanted to correct is, with Ryan Paes, it was actually Ice-T's first big breakthrough album. The title of one of the tracks on it was Six in the Morning, which a lot of people consider the song that started the gangster rap movement. NWA had a release that year, but it was their first release, and Straight Outta Compton was going to come out about 2 years later.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a huge, huge record as far as the change in the rap genre. Because that same year, there was also some gangster rap albums that came out. That was the year that... what's his name? Lord, I'm losing my mind right now. LL Cool J came out with Bigger Deffer, which was probably his biggest album that he had ever come out with. But Ice-T with that Six in the Morning kind of started the shift of hip-hop towards gangster rap, which was a huge movement, as you know. You know, everything just moved towards that. You know, before, as Childish Gambino said in one of his stand-up routines, you know, back in the 80s, this was hip-hop. "I went down to the hat store and I got me a hat." And next thing you know, Six in the Morning was just talking about the actual really dark side of hip-hop culture.
Well, and I don't know if I wrote it down because I had so much to write, but in 1987, the DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Yeah, it was... Rock the House.
Rock the House came out. Okay, and realizing that's not anywhere near gangster rap, but that was popular and that was kind of on the radio at the time. So that's where the hip-hop kind of world was as far as...
Well, things. In the same year, Fat Boys came out with their album Crushing, which was a huge release for the Fat Boys. That was their third LP, if I'm not mistaken.
And you know, to a little suburban white kid, DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fat Boys, they were on MTV.
Yeah.
They had videos.
It was a mainstream hip-hop.
And it was mainstream, and it was colorful, and it was popular. And like I remember being a kid, and a buddy of mine came over with the Rock the House, and had a copied tape that I listened to in my Walkman while I mowed the yard. And, you know, it was obvious, you know, it was just fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, hip-hop and rap in general took a very dark turn. Like
once Ice-T came out.
Very, very shortly afterwards.
Right, yeah.
Because you get into, like, 88, 89, 90, and kind of the rise of the East-West and the whole just dark.
Well, West Coast started the gangster rap movement. It was Ice-T, it was N.W.A., it was Too Short. You know, they all came with that darker pimp side, misogynistic gangster rap. Before then, you know, that same year, you also had Eric B. and Rakim came out with Paid in Full, which was a huge, huge album. You know, Eric B. and Rakim are two of the greatest rappers that, you know, they've ever been as far as lyricist goes. But everything just turned. It just the culture just took a different embrace.
It's kind of like with mainstream music, where everything's like everybody's happy, and then just give it a little bit of time, and Nirvana comes out, and everybody gets sad.
Yeah, you know, it's
like that was in 1991, but hey. All right. Let's get into movies for a second.
There's a lot of movies that year.
There are. It's a very long list. There's a lot that we need to talk about. But I'm just going to top line some of the ones that are not very noteworthy, but you're kind of like, oh, really? Remember the Sylvester Stallone Over the Top?
Yes, the arm wrestling epic.
which basically says that you have to have an arm wrestling mechanism in your truck while you're driving your truck. Remember, he had the thing
in
the truck.
Yes. Yeah. Like, you know, that forearm strength.
Lift his weights while he was driving. All right. Blind Date.
I love that movie so much, man. Dick DeRock. It's one of his roles, man.
Yeah, we talked about that the other day. Yeah. It's an early Bruce Willis movie. It's before Die Hard.
Yeah, but Moonlighting was still on at that time, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, just a quick segue with the arm wrestling thing. Shaquille O'Neal, I met him when he was playing at LSU. My ex-girlfriend used to tutor him. So I got to, and since then, since he's been in the NBA, I've run into him three times. One of the times was at Hooters on 59 Southwest Freeway, not far from Westland. I don't know if you know where that Hooters is right there. But I walk in there after work one day with some guys from work, and there's all this ruckus going on in the back. And Shaq was in there arm wrestling people. It was the funniest shit because he would, when he beat somebody, you know, who's going to beat Shaq, you know, at the Hooters on 59 Southwest Freeway? He would just do this over-the-top celebration and just act. The good dude is so silly, man. Every time I've met him,
he just seems like a guy who just enjoys life.
Awesome guy. He just... Well, I ran into him in Chuck E. Cheese one time in Sugar Land with his daughter. He has a daughter in Sugar Land. And he was in the ball pit with the kids. I mean, the guy is just awesome. And I finally watched the whole thing. And don't ask it. Apparently, I was incredibly bored. But I watched Steel this past week.
Oh, no.
That movie is as horrible as everybody's in.
You talk about arm wrestling, and we're a horror movie. Come on, we're a horror podcast, so... So my boss is this dude. He's a Nigerian guy. He's not as tall as me. He's probably about as tall as you. Like, dark black guy, muscular, super charismatic, super cool. Like, he's the guy that you want to be. He's just like, he's awesome. So it's hard whenever he sends out, like, angry emails, because you're just like, dude.
You don't want to disappoint him.
Yeah, right. But on his right arm, he's on his right bicep, he's got this giant white scar with stitch marks. And whenever you meet somebody, when you know somebody, you're like, you know, I'm not going to ask what happened to you. You're missing an eye. I'm not going to be like, so what happened to your eye, bro? But he's got this big-ass scar on his arm. And I've been knowing the guy for like 2 years. And finally, he said something about something. I was like, what? What happened to your arm, man? And he's like, okay, so this is what happened. He said that he and some friends were at a college ball game. They were at a football game. And they were all in the hotel, and they were all drinking. And he was arm wrestling people. And he was, like, if you look at the guy, he's not being like, oh, I was just, like, if you're arm wrestling this guy, he's winning or whatever. He said that he was arm wrestling guys, and he was beating them, and he was kind of winning, and just like everybody was shouting and stuff. And this other dude was like, "I got you." He said they posted up, and they were pretty evenly matched. And he said that he had been winning so much that he got lazy, and he leaned back, and he wasn't in proper form. And the dude was really strong, and the dude went, and he was pushing, and he said that he'd been almost pushed down, and he was going for the win. And when he was almost there, and he was pushing, and he started trying to rattle him, and he pushed once, pushed twice, and then snap. And he said that he blacked out. Like, he doesn't remember what happened afterwards, except for whenever he woke up, everybody was standing around being like, "Holy shit!" And they called the EMTs. Basically, if you're arm wrestling and you have your arm in a certain position, it's all muscle and leverage. But if you lean back and you're not doing it, then all of the strain goes on the bone.
Oh, Jesus.
So he was pushing down on this guy, and his own strength, not the other guy, because the other guy was to his side. He was pushing so hard, he actually snapped his humerus. Jesus. He snapped the bone in half, and his arm was just gone. So he had to go in, and the reason he has the big thing was because they went in, they cut him, and they put a plate to put his bone back together. And he said, even now, because he's still, he's a well-built, muscular guy. He was like, "Yeah, but my right arm is just weak as hell now because of that."
Right.
He's got a plate on it, but horror story. Oh, it makes me think of The Fly.
Yeah, when he breaks down that guy's arm.
Snaps the dude's arm off. He's like, "Oh my God."
I can tell you this. You just talk about somebody losing an eye. Amy right now has a corneal abrasion on one of her eyes. It was bothering her all weekend, so it was real bad with lights. I said, "You want me to go run and get you an eye patch over at Walgreens? You know, you can put some medicine on it and stuff and just keep it away from lights." She's like, "Yeah." So she was miserable. I mean, it was just horrible. So, you know, it's a Walgreens eye patch. It's not a costume eye patch. It's not going to look...
Doesn't look cool.
Wait. So she goes in the bathroom, she puts it on, she comes out, and she's just all upset, near tears, and she looks at me, she goes, "I don't look like Slade Wilson." Like, "You're not gonna look like Deadshot, baby. I'm sorry. It's a Walgreens eye patch designed for any size, fits all."
Dude, we got to get back on this thing, or it's going to take a week. Okay, Jaws the Revenge, the fourth entry in the Jaws series, the fourth and final, 1987. Superman 4, the fourth and final.
Yeah, Nuclear Man.
Nuclear Man. Masters of the Universe came out in 1987. Dolph Lundgren joined.
The thing that pissed me off the most about that movie was no Orko. And then replacing him with that troll-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
That was frustrating as hell. That was the biggest disappointment of that movie.
And Eddie Murphy Raw, 1987.
That's classic. That was a game changer there. That was the first, you know, in-theater release of a stand-up act. And it was huge, dude.
Eddie Murphy, so hilarious. The funny thing, and it's kind of, you're talking about hip-hop. And the sensibilities now of everybody being so offended by everything.
That could never be released today.
Well, all the hip-hop albums you're talking about. You have little suburban white kids walking around being like, "Yeah, bitch, yeah!" Eddie Murphy Raw. Like, there's very few people who can properly use the F word before... Eddie Murphy Raw.
We're not talking about the F-U-C-K word. We're talking about the other one.
Yes.
Because the whole Mr. T bit.
All of this.
There's no way that would fly today, dude. There's no way.
And the weird thing is, you know, we're editing ourselves now, but I just don't remember the difference between Delirious and Raw. He's all making fun of Michael Jackson in his little red outfit, and then he wears a little red outfit on the stage. Yeah. But Eddie Murphy Raw is a game changer. It's time. It's time to roll the boat a little bit.
You know what's weird is we've talked about before movies that can't be made nowadays. And I was listening to one of the podcasts. It's actually a sports podcast I listen to, but with the Sklar brothers. And you know who Big J Okerson is? He's a very un-PC comedian. And one thing he was talking about, and it got me thinking, Rocky, the original Rocky, white guy versus a black guy. That movie probably wouldn't be made today in the same vein.
They'd just switch the roles.
They'd switch the roles. Yeah, because they make the white guy the bad guy, which is just...
But in the original Rocky, Apollo wasn't a bad guy.
He wasn't a bad guy. He was just a nemesis.
He was a champion.
Let's look at Rocky III. You know, would you have the same thing with Mr. T being the over-the-top, threatening to, you know, say, telling Adrian, let's go over to my place, baby. I'll show what real man could do. You know, would you have that same thing? It's,
I don't know. The Rocky movies, of all of the things, of all of the different kinds of weird racism and sexism and stuff, the Rocky movies, I think, are a little bit untouchable because Apollo in Rocky, if you look at the champions in boxing, not the boxers, the boxing champions, pretty much from Ali straight down, they've all been black guys.
Nice, yeah.
And some of them are flamboyant, and some of them are not. But they're all black.
Yeah.
So if you take a white guy who's an underdog, and a poor underdog who might be a contender against one of these, just, you know, like Apollo was kind of modeled after like Frazier and Ali.
Yeah.
Like they're an amalgamation of just like Apollo was friendlier than Ali and he looked kind of like Frazier.
Right.
But, you know, Carl Weathers was like a perfect nemesis because he was friendly and he was charismatic and he was a nice guy in real life. But when you get in the ring,
yeah, he talked the talk and he walked the walk.
He'll whoop your ass. Rocky, I think, is a little bit untouchable, and I think that's why it's so well revered. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was also a Sylvester Stallone. That's he had $93 in the bank whenever he sold that screenplay. And it made him who he is now. Today,
yeah.
So, and I don't really think that anything in Rocky had... Nothing in Rocky was racist, I don't think.
No, no.
It was just a man against the odds.
See if it would be made today. Because the other thing that got me thinking about that is, I read an article today about Halloween costumes, in particular Black Panther. And it was weird because it was basically... White parents are afraid of letting their kids dress up as Black Panther for Halloween in fear of cultural appropriation.
As a parent, now, I don't have girls. I only have girls. I don't have boys.
Yes.
My opinion is on that. Let them do it.
Yeah, exactly. But we've come to a time where people are thinking about that.
You know who's thinking about that? Guilty white people.
Well, that's what I mean. Would that movie be made now with a white protagonist and a black antagonist? With
Rocky
the way people
might
think
be.
Now.
Rocky might be because it's real.
Yeah.
Rocky is innocent and Rocky is real. Rocky's real. If I'm a boxer, I'm a white guy and I'm a boxer, who am I going to go up against?
Yeah, who's going to be the... Yeah, who's going to be the
you
champ?
Know, so... It's, I don't think when it comes to sports, kind of all bets are off. It's there's yeah. no. If you want to let your kids dress up as Black Panther, freaking let them.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. But it's just weird that that's an issue right now. It's not weird. It's messed up that people would actually be afraid of stuff like that.
The world's gone and got itself all nuts. It needs an enema.
Right. Let's get back on track. I apologize for the segue.
Back to books. So Stephen King was hitting it hot right then. I didn't write down the third one because I didn't like the book. But in 1987, three books by Stephen King came out. Misery, which would later become a Kathy Bates joint.
Yes.
The Drawing of the Three, which is part two of the Dark Tower series, which is probably his magnum opus.
Yeah.
Eyes of the Dragon, which is one of his lesser known books, but is still
a good book.
A phenomenal book. And The Tommyknockers. If you're Stephen King in 1987, you can't even take a leak because you're afraid to pee on some money. Like, it's just, it's just rolling in.
He can't lose. He can't miss.
Not at all. And then he's got all of everything coming in from all the other movies. And flipping over to movies, if you're Stephen King, Creepshow 2 came out.
Yay, The Raft.
The best part of that entire movie. But yeah. Let's go ahead and all right. What we're gonna do, because our end segment is normally about 30-35 minutes long. We got about another 10 minutes before we gotta lead into part two. Let me ask you, just looking at what we scratched versus what we haven't.
Oh, dude, we barely scratched the surface, dude. There's right. So many movies we still need to get into.
So where do you want to go from here?
Awesome. Dealer's choice, man. Dealer's choice. We're going to got some TV.
Well, I already mentioned Married with Children came out in 87. Yes. Tracy Ullman came out in 87. The Simpsons came out in 87. Full House. You're like, that's not a horror thing. Full House has had a cultural impact that I think is bigger than people realize.
Yep.
TGIF for Full House, it was a thing in the 90s. Full House ran for a long time. The Olsen twins, they were like three. Whenever this show came out, you realize that Heath Ledger was doing drugs with one of the Olsen twins whenever he cashed out right before the release of Dark Knight.
Yeah.
The only reason they're famous is because of Full House. Full House landed in 1987.
Right.
Nobody would know the name John Stamos if it wasn't for 1987.
Well, what about South Park? They had the John Stamos leg on the monster.
That was the Barbra Streisand versus The Cure, right?
No, that was a different episode.
Okay. But Full House debuted in 1987.
It was a huge show. Have you ever listened to Bob Saget's stand-up?
It's so nasty.
The dude is pervy as hell, dude.
The funny thing about Bob Saget, and I remember reading this, like, his early 90s, he's like, I don't know why I was picked for this. It's just because of the way he looked.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just a comedian. They're like, you're going to play the single father of four
adorable
girls.
Children.
And like all
straight-laced
this.
Straight-laced and everything.
Very, he's like, so he'd walk in and put his briefcase down. He'd be like, hi, kids. He's like, but he's like having, he's discussing his wife's bodily functions on stage.
Oh, yeah. He talks about all kind of nasty stuff on stage. There was also, remember the show Jamie Kennedy's Experiment, where Jamie Kennedy would do like candid camera type practical jokes on people? Where he does one where he's driving, he gets these people on a Hollywood tour bus, and he's the driver. And he pulls up to Bob Saget's house, and he breaks in and brings all these people into Bob Saget's house. And they open the refrigerator, and there's a pig's head cut off just sitting in the refrigerator, and it's full of bologna and alcohol, and that's it. And then he takes him into Bob Saget's bedroom, and there's like a stack of porn next to the bed, and these people are all jumping on Bob Saget's bed, and Bob Saget shows up. It's the funniest shit you've ever seen, dude.
And they don't have any
idea. They have no idea, yeah. They have no idea what's going on. I love Jamie Kennedy. The Mask destroyed his career. The Mask 2. That he was in, the Jim Carrey sequel, that movie, that killed his career. That got rated so low that it was sad to see. Jamie Kennedy's awesome. Okay, what else we got?
In 1987, and let's go ahead and close this episode so we can start part two.
Okay.
In Jesus, this will be part three. Wait, I don't want to close it yet. Oh, God, man. Oh, there's so much good stuff. I don't want to make all the people wait until 3 weeks from now. But in 1987, okay, this is kind of like the in memoriam. Whenever you're watching an award show and they're like, these are all the people that left us this year. These are all the things that were on TV in 1987 in their final season. I might even play some music. Oh, excuse me. But if you were in 1987 and you were watching TV, or if you weren't, I don't know. These things were still on. The Love Boat. The
Love Boat.
Was still on TV in 1987. Silver Spoons.
Oh, God. Ricky Schroeder.
Was still on TV. The A-Team was still on TV in 1987.
You know, on Silver Spoons, I remember the day, because I was into 24. You remember 24? With Kiefer Sutherland?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I used to love 24. And the season where Ricky Schroeder showed up just cracked me up, dude. I was like, oh my God, he looks the same, just taller. It was the weirdest shit, dude.
I remember seeing an interview on TV. I think it was after, I don't remember what he was on. It might have been Lonesome Dove in the early 90s. But Ricky, nay, Rick Schroeder, he dropped the Y so that he could be taken more seriously.
As an adult, yeah.
But he was on some, like, Entertainment Tonight show, and he was smoking on the show. And he's sitting on the bench, and he's smoking cigarettes. And it was the most awkward thing, because you could tell that he either didn't normally smoke. And this was, like, I was a little kid, but I had been around people who smoked all the time. And when you smoke, there's a certain way you hold your cigarette, as in, this is this thing in my hand, and I'm talking about things, and so then I'm going to smoke, and then
right.
Move my hand away. And he had it right up in front of his mouth, like he was Edward R. Murrow or something. And he was like dragging on a cigarette, and it was like the cherry was getting really big and fat, and you could tell the interviewer was very uncomfortable, being like, you don't normally do this. Like, you're just trying to look grown up. And he even asked him, like, so are you smoking now? I'll try to look more grown up. And Ricky Schroeder got pissed. He's like, no.
I've been smoking for years.
It's awesome, though. And it was one of those things you probably won't find on YouTube, but it was hilarious. He was just like, no, I'm a grown up. In 1987, Fraggle Rock was still on. Remember Amazing Stories?
I do remember Amazing Stories, like Twilight Zone type stuff. Yep, I remember that very well.
Remington Steel.
I remember that show as well.
Airwolf. And Transformers was still on in 1987. I think with that, we're going to have to close down episode one.
Okay.
You're going to have to, dude.
We got a long way to go.
We have a lot of stuff to cover. We'll see you next week after we kind of prioritize some of this stuff, because the movies alone, and the music, we only knocked off two.
I know. Well, I added a few.
So we'll see you next week with part two of 1987, and we might even see you 2 weeks from now with part three. we'll see how it goes. If Scott doesn't watch The Fly, then we'll be back in with part three of 1987.
I'll get to it this weekend.
So until then, guys, keep it scary.
Later.
'cause I must know the reason why we say goodbye. Wait just a moment.